And you're welcome back to the programme. Next conversation is with Fine Gael MEP for Midlands North West, Maria Walsh. And we're talking about the AI generation of inappropriate images of children. Just conscious, if you have young people at home from school or what have you, that maybe... I'll leave that up to you. I'm not going to preach. You know yourself what's right and what's wrong. We're here on this for the next 5 minutes or so. Maria Walsh, good morning to you. Long time no speak. See, how are you keeping?
Good morning, and thanks very much for having me on.
Right, so new laws to criminalise AI-generated child sexual abuse material will be voted for on by MEPs this week. Is this a fait accompli? Is there anything that complicates what should be a no-brainer sort of process?
Yeah,
I beg your pardon.
Yeah, a couple of things, and like as you pointed out, you know, for adults or guardians in the room, you know, the next few minutes we'll discuss various things. I hope because this is lived experience for many victims and survivors right across the EU. But ultimately, technology is moving at, as we know, a hell of a lot faster than policy. And what this revision does for the child sexual abuse legislation is put it up to speed. So any form of AI-generated child sexual abuse material is now against the law. Wild to even say that in 2025, but at the fact of the rise of deepfake, so AI content, artificially content, I should say, created, and that's images, audio files, videos, are out there and are being used to entice younger and younger people into a form of child abuse. And this legislation goes against essentially this legislation is trying to eradicate that and stop that. It also removes statute of limitation, which up to this point hasn't been the case. Ireland is separate. We have no statute of limitation for child abuse.
So what does this mean, Maria, in real terms? So the removal of statute of limitations on child sexual abuse carries in all countries on Tuesday, which will. So what does that mean in real terms? Is this relating to historic cases or is it what?
It is. I mean, from in truth to those listening, what we know in Europe, one in five children is estimated to be a victim of some form of sexual violence, one in five. And at an EU level, again, it's reported that the average age of disclosure of such violence by the victim and survivor is anything around 52 years of age. And about 30% of victims and survivors don't report at all. And then when you look at EU member states, 27 of them and growing, the statute of limitation runs out in some cases. So what this legislation is doing is essentially making sure that there is no set limit, that if you offend, if you violate, if you sadly hurt a child, then at any point you should face the full judicial system and your penalty. And that the victim and survivor knows that at any point that they can make that case. Mm-hmm. And like I said, Ireland has been leading in that in many ways. But when you look at the round in terms of AI-generated content, in the fact that we need to have tougher penalties for all offenders, be it using AI or otherwise, then at the EU level, this is where it's set.
In relation to the laws that criminalise AI-generated child sexual abuse material, I hope the answer to this question is yes. Does this extend to creating images without a victim, so to speak? In other words, where there is no source material. In other words, an image has been created that depicts a child, even though that child doesn't exist as such, because unfortunately AI is advanced that it can do that. So would the creation of an image of child sexual abuse be illegal through this vote?
Correct. And where this legislation, slightly murky waters in terms of, does it live under the Digital Services Act, where you bring in big tech, which is our next iteration? This is not to leave out these tech giants that need to be pulling down. It certainly doesn't even need to get online. It should be stopped immediately and tracked and traced so that we can stop the perpetrator from ever hurting an individual. That lives in the Digital Services Act, so we've more work to do there. But within this case, to pick up from your question, where this does stop is we're seeing so many reports growing that an AI generated image or a voice of a child using AI is attracting children into conversations of sexual abuse. Mm-hmm. And that is what this legislation has been developed.
But in and of itself, that sounds like it's crossing over into grooming and what have you. But in and of itself, as far as you're aware, if someone creates an AI-generated image or video of a child that doesn't exist, that is that going to be illegal?
I want to check. I want to make sure I'm correct in that one because we are doing work parallel to this.
Understood. I just think that it really needs to extend to that. Now, secondly, too, unfortunately, I've had contacts from, and I may have referenced this to you before, mm-hmm. apologies, but it's so important. I do think on this child from time to time, 14, 15 years of age, yeah. her face, placed on a nude body. The family had seen it. It matched her frame, if you know what I'm on about. Yeah. So instantly, that's put out onto social media, Snapchat, shared amongst friends, as if this person allowed that picture to be taken of them. That is categorically illegal. It's probably illegal under national law, as is, but certainly this extra level of EU protection is there. Yeah. That is illegal.
Yeah, so that was what we would consider a deepfake. Yeah. And we've spoken about this. And I think of that young girl and her family all the time too, and actually sadly use it as an example where some in the most west periphery of the European Union is had their life destroyed by using AI or by the fact that our legislation and our technology just didn't protect her at a time when she needed that protection. So yes, that does include. At a national level, we have the likes of Coco's Law, which was created in honour of Nicole Coco Fox. Again, that law, which is what we've been working on in the Gender Equality Committee for some time, under the gender violence legislation, Coco's Law minds the victim and survivor in the sense of anybody who distributes that information or that image. Or that video file or audio file, but does not stop the perpetrator. Under gender-based violence legislation, we're working to do that. Under child abuse legislation, in this case that we're talking about, that also protects that child. And ultimately then we need to make sure national member states like our own bring this into law immediately, and other member states do too, because if you can imagine, if I was a 16-year-old girl and I happened to be on Erasmus or visiting another member state, and that happened to me, well, your rights should travel with you regardless of what member state that you experience that legislation. It's like if any tech platform or anywhere you use social media inside the realm of the European Union, which is what we have the toolbox to do, you should be protected and minded.
And this is off the back of the will of the people as well. I mean, you know, we have made inroads. We are making inroads. We continue to do so. But the people of Ireland, it is their, they demand, don't they, the legislature nationally and on an EU level. 9 out of 10 believe we failed to address the issue of child and sexual abuse in Ireland. That's a live sort of feeling at the moment. So there is, and thankfully, and why shouldn't there be, there is universal support for us to do absolutely everything we can, especially in this changing modern world, to protect our young people, sorry.
Yeah, well, and all persons. I mean, we could go down the road of deepfakes, and the use of fraud cases with our aging community. The sexualization of imagery predominantly hitting young people online is horrendous. And just to remind those, and we've discussed it before, the Europol, so the EU law enforcement agency, estimates that 90% of online content that we will see by next year will be AI generated, so synthetically made. Mm-hmm. So that means conversations like this are incredibly important, so that we're sharing real information.
But do you know what's worrying, Maria? Or not? Listen, I don't want to preach how people live their lives or what they do, but we saw from the Reuters survey recently that in excess of 50% in the United States now of people get their video, get their news from, well, 20-odd% get them from Joe Rogan, or they've been exposed to his content, right? But others as well. So the public are choosing, particularly in the United States, to source their news and content themselves. And yet we're seeing this massive acceleration in that content. Like, I can't go to X for News now, because if it's, it could be the Iranians or the Israelis repurposing video, using videos from Pakistan from 5 years ago. Like, it's got to the point now where I actually can't trust anything on social media. Yet more and more people, particularly in the United States and to a lesser extent here, are sourcing the news from there. Now, people have issues with public service media, local media. I'm not saying we're the bastions of the truth, right? I wouldn't be so naive. But my point is more people are getting their news in a space where more of the content is actually made up.
Yeah.
And that is, I wonder where we go from there.
Yeah. And to your point, I mean, I wholeheartedly agree with everything you shared. And like anything, the closer the news sources to you, i.e. local radio or newspapers, the more truthful in terms of community engagement and conversation and honest critique. I would wholeheartedly agree. I jump on and off X, formerly known as Twitter, because like that,
I'd say less so now.
Something different.
Is it less so now, Maria? Yeah, well, I've stopped posting because it's.
Yeah.
I don't think it shares. Well, there's two things that happen. A, you get abuse, or B, it's just lifted by the Nationals and you don't get any credit for it, right? but anyway, but be that as it may. But I just...
We might need another debate on that one.
Yeah, but my point is, it's just that it's not a useful space for... And I love information, and it's just... I don't feel it useful to either consume it from there or to share it from there.
No, and then as a public representative, I can give you some harrowing stories where... The world of online has meshed into the offline world, and it's a horrible space sometimes because, sadly, our attention span is less than 3 seconds based off one report I read last week. The fact that we are getting so much content at all times of the day in our hands at any course that lifts our mood and decreases our mood is a worrying sign. And we've discussed at many lengths and conversations around the impact mental health has on our citizens. And for me, this has to go in parallel with education. Like, critical thinking has slowly disintegrated. And I have colleagues, family and friends living in the States. As I say, sometimes drinks the Kool-Aid that I certainly wouldn't agree with. I have colleagues here in the European Parliament that I sit beside, and we have ongoing conversations about the use of tech, the use of AI, the impact it has on mental health. And some of those wouldn't agree with me and would agree with a stranger and what they say online.
Yeah. It's funny, isn't it?
And that's kind of
disarming because you think you know me, you trust me. And one final very point on this, Maria, sorry, and I just thought it was really quite regrettable and I hope we don't see more. There was an incident between Macron and his wife as they were exiting a plane, and I'm not talking to that, I don't know what went on or whatever, but I did note that some of his people tried to spin it that it was created by AI, and I just think, you know, I can understand in the panic why they might do that, but I'll tell you, when the people heading the countries... It's like the misuse of the word bully or abuse. We really have to be careful that people in power do not try and use confusion to aid themselves.
Yeah, and sadly, I mean, listen, I on top of that, I again, I wholeheartedly agree. On top of that, we have, you know, people in the political world that uses ChatGPT and AI, and it's not for the good of anybody. And we need to be really clear, much like we put legislation in place for influencers or those that get paid to promote brands or services, they're required to post and flag that it is an advert.
Yeah.
So too should that be the case, so that we actually begin to get credible levels of truth versus wish-wash or, you know, opinionated journalism. That's
fascinating as always. Delighted to see the care of our children being taken as seriously as it is. It's so, so important. Thanks very much, Maria Walsh. Have a lovely day. Take care. That's Fine Gael MEP for Midlands Northwest. How are you all doing this Tuesday morning? It's the 17th of June and the cloud beginning to break up here over the Northwest, which is great. Okay, a listener pointed out earlier on when I mentioned our conversation about school uniforms. Greg, you've been talking about that for 20 years on the programme, and indeed, and probably before that, because every single year there's an awful lot of pressure on parents because certain schools, not all, have very specific outfits that you can only get maybe from one local shop that you have to get embroidered. And then there's the matter maybe of tracksuits and tracksuit bottoms. And there's an awful lot of pressure, and the bill can run into hundreds. And then other schools might allow some sort of a more general blazer, which you end up getting in the middle aisle of a shop, for an example, and you can go along and get your crests and iron them on for much less money. There's certainly a competition element to this. So I'm very pleased, actually, I must say, to see the Antitrust Competition and Consumer Protection Commission intervening in this conversation. Craig Whelan, good morning to you. Thanks for your time today.
Good morning, Greg.
Right, obviously you've seen the problem there that I've just identified. I suppose in researching before coming up with a position, what have you found in terms of, you know, access to uniforms, competition, etc.?
Sure. So what we found is that really back to school is a really expensive time for parents. And that is because, as you said, they have to buy uniform items, they have to buy devices. And sometimes what they find is they have very limited choice or maybe no choice at all. So from our research, we found that these back to school costs are very expensive. But what we've also had is contacts from a number of concerned parents across the country who reach out to us to give us examples of, you know, issues that they see when they have to look at back to school items. So we get contacts from parents looking at things like, you know, I have to buy this jumper, I have to go to this retailer, it's 30 minutes drive away from me, the jumper's not that great quality, I see a very similar jumper just without the crest for half the price in, as you said, the middle aisle of the supermarket. So what we're saying to schools is to think about the arrangements that they have in place, both in terms of where those items come from, where what retailers parents can buy from, but also what the school uniform policy is in general. Is it really specific with embroidered or, you know, with crests, or is it a bit more generic where it's a plain jumper in a particular colour? And to think about the implications for that, for cost for parents and for choice for parents.
Yeah, one place, just one school here, the back to school, they can only get the uniform from one place. And you're obliged to have a uniform. The zip, €28. And they've sent me their shopping cart here, if you don't mind. The polo shirt, €18. Skinnies, €24. And they're specific to this particular school, which I'm not mentioning at the moment. Leggings, €28. So you top that up. You can't get it anywhere else, or you know, you're not conforming to school policy. You know, you're up over well over €100 there, and that's for one set for the start of the year. Like, and you can't get them anywhere else. Like, what's going on with these deals between individual shops and their schools?
Well, what we found from our research is that in a lot of cases, these arrangements have been in place for years, if not decades, and the school, from what we've seen from research, hasn't actually done a lot to think about the implications of those. So it's an arrangement that's been in place. It's not reviewed regularly. Parents are kind of, as you see there, paying high prices for uniform items that maybe not are of great, or maybe not of great quality. They use, you know, for a particular year, maybe they move school, maybe they get damaged, they have to go out and buy them again. We've seen reports as well of, you know, for tracksuits that can be bought in a set, the top and the bottom. What if, you know, you get a hole in the trouser legs? Well, suddenly you have to buy a jumper as well that you don't need. So what we're saying to schools is to think about those arrangements that they have in place. So if it is that they have an exclusive supplier, ask, is that really necessary? Are there other retailers in the locality that could sell these? Or is it for even better to give greater choice to parents, change the uniform requirements? So, you know, there aren't as many items that have crests. There aren't as many items that are in unique colours that are only available from a particular location, to allow parents to make those decisions for themselves so they can make the best choice for their particular circumstances on cost, quality, convenience. To think about those and to include parents in that discussion as well, you know, to make sure parents understand where this policy has come from. They have the opportunity to input into it, and that they can voice concerns that they have, as you said, you know, if they're faced with large bills, that they can say to school, this is the cost that you're imposing us. We don't understand where this is coming from. And maybe, and what we've seen from our engagement, the schools are willing to hear those views, are willing to explain why they've arrived at a particular policy, and in cases are willing to change the policy.
I don't think it would be hard, certainly in some of the cases, and it's easy for me to say, to prove some of these practices are anti-competition, because I could demonstrate that a school that has a specific deal with one shop, there are three or four shops in that area if they wanted to open up the playing field, so to speak. So why at this point is the commission only making recommendations? Can you not? Have you no role of enforcement in this area?
So what we're trying to achieve at the moment is changes in behaviour, changes in practice. And we've seen that when we engage with schools in the past, that there has been that willingness to engage. We receive complaints from suppliers who are saying, look, I can supply this uniform that's only available at this one shop. I can enter that market. So what we're doing is raising this issue to schools. We're building on guidance that we've issued in the past. We never rule out enforcement action. What we're trying to do at the moment is raise this as an issue, to allow schools that chance to reflect, to, as you know, back to school season approaches, as parents are kind of starting to see the equipment lists, that they can have those conversations with schools. As I said, we would never ever rule out enforcement action. But what we're saying is, if there's exclusive arrangements in place, maybe to think about refreshing those, doing a tender process, asking for expressions of interest from retailers who might sell those. If it's possible to sell them multiple retailers, do that. But I think what we want is schools to think about these arrangements first, to engage with parents, but ultimately to keep that the cost implication in mind. That's what we want to see at the moment.
Okay, we'll talk to you in a year or three then, when we're on about enforcement, because I wouldn't be optimistic. But anyway, listen, I'm just an old pessimistic person anyway. Thanks so much, Craig Whelan, Director of Antitrust, Competition and Consumer Protection Commission. Some of your comments coming in here, I've already pointed out one school there whereby your shopping cart fills very, very quickly, doesn't it? And you're paying a premium for some of these products. Greg, I see school uniforms are in the news this morning. I've always thought school uniforms don't really proper prepare kids for a professional environment. They stifle individuality at a crucial age. I would be in favour of uniforms. I think there can be an awful lot of pressure to sort of change up outfits and stuff on a day-to-day basis, and kids can be very conscious of that. I think uniforms sort of make everyone the same, but I think they should be affordable and there should be competition and you shouldn't have exclusive deals. And I think iron-on crests should be an option. But I would, and it's of no significance what I think, but I think I do like uniforms, and you know, you talk of individuality and that it stifles individuality, but I mean, we have to conform at work for the most, in a lot of workplaces you have to conform anyway. You know, you work in Abbott or something, there's a uniform, and I'm sure it's the same in other factories. And also too, you can have children that, you know, come from poorer backgrounds that don't have the same ability to express their individuality. But what do you think? The conversation can go on to whether or not we should have uniforms. It's really having affordable uniforms is where we started. A caller loves school uniforms. When everyone's in the same uniform, you reduce that pressure to keep up with the latest fashion trends or expensive brands. It means kids aren't judged on their clothes, but on who they are and their abilities. That can be a real weight off parents' shoulders too, especially when you think about the cost of branded everyday clothes. I would agree with you on that one, I will say. Hi, I'm just after putting my order into our school today. €20 for a jumper, €15 for a polo shirt, no option to buy elsewhere, very expensive when you've a few children and need more than one set per child. Of course it is. And you know yourself, you could probably go into a shop not far from where I'm sitting here now and get that jumper for €8 or the polo shirt for a fiver. You know, you could. So why should you have to pay £35 just for the top half for one round, you know? Hi, I just thought I'd let you know, when you're discussing school uniforms, that our national school, I'm not sure if I can mention it, I'll check with Caroline, they've brought in a new school uniform for September, T-shirt, jumper and tracksuit bottoms. They have the school crest and the leggings for girls have the X gear on them, which retail at £28. So those were those prices that I mentioned for that particular school. So the school's just introduced it. It's St. Bathan's and St. John's. What are they going to do? Shoot me. St. Bathan's zip €28, St. Bathan's polo shirt €18, and the skinny's €24. So what's that? £32, £42, £52, £62 plus £8, £70 for the zip top, the polo shirt, and the skinnies. €70 for one kid, and that's one set. My God, I don't know. I was going to say I'm glad I don't have to worry about that anymore, and then I forgot I'd done it all again. I mean, all to come again. Thank God. Can I play really a really special request for a lovely lady, Frances Doherty? She's in Derry and originally from Gweedore, and she's celebrating her 105th birthday today. Born 1919. Isn't that astonishing? Happy birthday, Frances. I do hope you're still listening. I did intend to play this a little earlier, but we here at Highland Radio and everyone across the Northwest want to wish you a very special 105th birthday today. But the request came in from two people who believe you're very special as well, and that is Cahill and Martina. So Frances, I hope you're listening. Frances Doherty in Derry, but originally from beautiful Gweedore. Happy 105th birthday today. I hope you have a lovely, lovely day. 086 6025000 is the WhatsApp and text number. Thanks for all your contacts and keeping us so blooming busy. It's really appreciated. Morning, Greg. Do you have any update on the priest that was in Lifford a few months back for allegations of inappropriate contact with minors? It's gone quite quiet. I think there was a court appearance a couple of weeks ago. Those wheels do move really quite slowly because there's a judicial process to follow. You can't, once someone is charged, you can't discuss the merits of them being charged or not being charged. It's just not the way it is. Unfortunately, some might say. Josephine Kelly, how are you getting on? Are you sitting outside, or are you trying to trick me with your artificial intelligence?
The artificial intelligence is working well today.
I was going to say, I could just about see over out the window here in your direction, it's a little bit more cloudy. But you know what? It's going to look like that at this week. Josephine Kelly of Carja and Errigal and the Wild Atlantic Nature Life, they're teaming up. You said teaming up. And it's for an open meeting. For whom and about what?
So it's for local farmers and shareholders in Commonage in, you know, the northwest Donegal, the area between Errigal, Muckish, and over to the coastline of Crockfalla, that area. And kind of the background behind this, the project kind of started off in southwest Mayo, and they were looking at the Commonage areas in that vicinity, and they were looking at doing some kind of project that would involve the local farmers. And they approached us then, Cairns and the Harrogla, to see if we would be interested in teaming up with them to look at a project that would span kind of the Mayo and the Galway areas, because the Commonages make up quite a lot of the landscape in both areas, and probably the practices and the condition of the habitats in those two areas are very different. So it's a good spread when you have, you know, different areas and different farming practices and different methods not being used. The whole idea of the project is looking at Commonage areas and looking at how we can potentially, with the help of the local farmers there, improve the landscape.
Is there incentives to do so? You know, because as you say, people might be using the Commonage for different reasons, and you know, a universal approach obviously would be beneficial. So through the is there opportunities here, I suppose? Because we always want to know what's in it for us, all right? I mean, obviously, we're motivated to try and do our best for the environment and biodiversity, but also, too, you want to know, like, could I change my practices to the benefit of me?
Yeah, well, Commonages are notoriously difficult to do any type of work on, because some of them could have up to 100 shareholders. And to do any type of work on them, you know, you need to get the buy-in of all the shareholders. So that makes it really difficult to begin with. And a lot of the farmers who are in the Acres CP schemes, their Commonage areas have been scored, and a lot of them has been scored quite low because of the condition of the habitats. So the whole idea is that if we can improve, work with the farmers to improve those, it'll improve their payments at the end of the day.
So what did we learn from Mayo, and how did they sort of overcome the fact that, as you say, you're dealing with multiple people with probably varying interests?
Yeah, they're at a very similar stage to ourselves. They're only at the starting block there. So the initial application was owed up with them in mind, but then when we came on board, it was expanded out. So what we're looking at doing is there'll be a project officer based in Donegal working, and there'll be a project manager in Mayo. So we'll be working alongside each other and kind of parallel. From my understanding is that maybe the practices are a little bit different in Mayo, and maybe they could potentially be overgrazing on some of the mountains, whereas in our cases maybe the mountains are understocked and there's not as much grazing, which means that the heather then can take hold and grow, and it makes it more difficult to manage. Even, you know, when the heather gets too long, it's more difficult for farmers to put their sheep out in the mountain because there's very little grazing in that there for them.
So how are you reaching the? I mean, obviously, it's good to get an, to for us to be chatting here and to reach out to people. So, have you also reached out to shareholders of Commonage in the area we're talking of separately? Is there a list? Can they be reached like that? Or are you hoping that they will self-identify and come forward?
Yeah, well, this is the initial stage. We had a meeting in January or February, and it was just to kind of to see would the shareholders and the farmers in the area be interested in for us, you know, going forward and putting in this application. And buying in the room was quite positive on that evening. So now we're going back to the landowners and the shareholders and saying, look, this has been approved. And now, like, we want to know, are you definitely interested in going ahead with that? Now, the last meeting, I think we had about 50 shareholders at the meeting. So we would be hoping that we'll have a good turnout at the meeting this Thursday as well. And that will give the farmers a better understanding of what's going to be involved in this project as well. So there'll be representatives from South Mayo Development Company there and Wild Atlantic Nature, and they'll be able to give a little bit more information. And then from there, we'll be reaching out to the individual shareholders and landowners.
All right, and talk to us one more time, or explain to us one more time, the areas covered here.
Yeah, so you're talking about the area between Errigal and Muckish Mountain, and over to the coast at Crookfall, a kind of a triangle area, kind of the northwest Donegal.
And the meeting is on the 19th of June. That's this coming Thursday at 8 p.m. in Austin Loch Alton, Gortahawk.
That's right.
And the idea is that everyone comes on the journey. This isn't about enforcing anything, is it? This is about everybody sort of seeing, can we all get on the same page to the benefit of everyone, but also obviously to for the sustainability of farming going forward and biodiversity.
Exactly, yeah. And like, no works will take place without farmer and shareholders buy-in. So it's very important that they're taken along on the journey, because these, like, it's the local people who have been managing these landscapes for generations. They have the knowledge, they know what works best and what doesn't work. So it's important that they're involved.
All right, listen, thank you so very much indeed. Have a wonderful day. That's Josephine Kelly there. So you'll know if that's of relevance to you. Why have we a bishop and a priest outlining the health issues involved in the dangers of vaping and alcohol consumption in young people? Should that duty not lie with the Department of Health? I've never seen any adverts on radio or TV exposing the dangers of vaping. It's a medical issue, not a religious one. But, I mean, for many people, they look to the church for leadership as well, to very respected voices. It is obviously in the context of the pledge being adapted to include vaping. So they've got, I mean, they've got a horse in the race, you know. And it's relevant to those who are making their confirmation or are of the Catholic religion, I suppose. In terms of vaping, the stuff out there about whether or not we should be doing it, but not enough. I feel vapes are worse, are the worst thing introduced. I know kids who use them who never ever smoked. I witnessed a young fella buying 34 in various fragrances. He was in his school uniform. Most of them are now addicted. Well, listen, if you consume nicotine, you don't just have a go and then stop. You are, if you start doing it regularly, you're stuck. And it's an addiction that is very, very hard to relieve yourself of. Hi, Greg. Is there a collision on in Letterkenny Town? The two lanes from the Dry Arch is gridlocked. Also, Leck Road at Old Town, Ballymacool at Old Dunn's, totally blocked. That was at 9:30, so I'm not sure what happened. Sorry, I only got to that right now. Greg, you nearly gave me a heart attack. My husband's birthday is the 18th of July. You said this was the 17th of July instead of June. I'm sorry, but now, look, you've got a month. You've got a month now to make sure that... And, you know, us men need a little bit more care and attention, I think. You know, we need better presents, more tea in bed. You know, I think we're losing the art of caring for our men. Not. Greg, I'm so glad you have the rally to talk about and the Lexus and other cars. I hope that's not anyone related to you has a modified car. I'm not sure. I don't think so. Does? I don't think so. Is anyone related to me have a modified car? I don't think so. Not that I'm aware of. No. And if they do, I'm not their keeper. You know what I mean? Like, you're not your brother's keeper. I don't judge people on what their family or father or brother or son does. Each individual's their own. But I don't think so. Have I ever driven a modified car? Yeah. Did I forget to tell the insurance company I put a tow bar on once? Yes, I did, believe it or not. And then I remembered and told them. You know, I'm not preachy. I'm not an angel. People can do whatever they like. I've got a role here to try and make sure the information's out there. But at the end of the day, if you want to drive around in your Lexus in one wheel, that's up to you. But I've told you what the guards are saying, right? People living on roads where boy and girl racers do no donuts or racing are dreading this weekend. Asking people to get the number plates of a speeding car is ridiculous. Greg seems to think the rally is a great thing, with no thought for us living beside roads where these racers speed and disturb us and our farm animals. No, I mean, I've just said it's good for the economy. Literally had two guests on warning of people not to do that. Warning of a guard saying you can't have a loud exhaust, you can't diff in public. Like quite literally, two guards in here telling people to just that they can't do this behaviour. And you believe I'm insensitive to the realities of the rally. Anyway, that's fine. Check out all the information. The HSE wants to opt out of organ donation. The computer system was hacked before. Can they guarantee all this info won't be stolen? Look, at the end of the day, tell your parents, tell whoever, tell your loved ones you don't want. You can't drag the organs from you. You know, like people, at the moment now, people are organ donors and their you know, the wife or husband says, nah, sorry, their organs are coming home with me. Like opt out if you want to, but currently family can still block organ donation. You know, there's not going to be an organ factory somewhere with everyone's organs on ice. You know, you still can say, nah, don't touch them. They're going to fight with you. In fact, in some hospital, there's not even someone there to discuss organ donation at times. Well done to you and Highland team for all them statistics on the imbalance at LUH from a lot of other hospitals. Shame. Yeah, I can't take credit for it. We give them a platform, but it's the medical professionals themselves that have come up with them. What about all the patients sent from Letterkenny to Dublin and Galway? They add to their workload, none referred back. It's all part of the same conversation. The more services we have in Letterkenny, the less travel there is for people. Hi, Greg. What's the story going into Ballybuffet via Letterkenny on Sunday from Gore to Hawke for the Donegal game? Would it be better taking a different route? I don't know. I don't know the answer. I can't give you that answer with any. Would you not go through Glenties though? Go down that road and in through Glenties, right? And things will move fine. It's just really probably the Polestar will be a bit jammered. Some of your texts here, right? Hold up a second, Greg. Aren't all images of that nature, whether the subject exists or is fictional, already illegal? Pretty sure that is the case currently, hence why I asked previously, isn't this already illegal? I just hope it is, to be honest with you. That was my question, because anything that sort of gives these people that might be interested in that any pass at all, I would want blocked. So I'm not sure. And then the answer to that became a little bit less clear. So it's something I want to check. It should definitely be the case that any image, whether real or not, purporting or portraying children in this position should be illegal, and anyone responsible for creating or distributing them needs to be locked up. I don't understand how these things aren't already captured under standing law relating to the issue. Like, how does AI make it legal when the existence of the images is illegal already? It's just a complicated space, isn't it? And until such time as something's put on the statute, it's like in cases of domestic violence, you would think, wouldn't you, that if you strangle someone, that's already illegal. In your home, for an example, but there had to come in a law to make that specifically illegal. It probably would have been covered by abuse or assault, but it had to be made a specific crime for prosecutorial purposes. I think that's a fair enough analogy. Do you know what I mean? So whilst it might seem obviously illegal, sometimes you do need a specific law to ensure that people get charged for that and face the full extent of the serious nature of that crime. Can the guard stop the rallying on the R254 where they stop traffic and race cars? It is part of National Park with wildlife and sheep grazing. The official rally does nothing to stop this illegal activity, and it's not their job. I understand where you're coming from. I get your frustration. We'll pass that on to the guards on your behalf. Jim McGuinness talking about travelling to Roscommon. Donegal do not get a fair share of anything with the GEA and always forced to travel across the country for matches. Are the parts of Mayo as far away from Roscommon, the ground in Roscommon, as there are parts of Donegal? So I saw someone say that. I'm not sure. Re-NCT, I was originally booked for the 24th of August. Today at 10 a.m. on the website, I got it moved to the 24th of June. So there you go. The reason I say 12 is because you get in but it's worth checking every morning. So that's a big difference. That's that listener. I know we can book it and then you worry about driving for the next couple of months and you get the wrong guard. They can take your car off you. So just having it booked in and of itself is not necessarily enough. NCT booking, if you ring the office in Dublin, you get a date sooner. Indeed, but I just like the after 12 thing because you get a date really, really sooner. And I've not found the NCT staff on the phone to be the most friendly of people, if that makes sense. I just checked the RSA site and you can get an NCT in Cairn done. It looked like there was a good few options, indeed. As I say, I checked last week for Letterkenny and the following week there was all day, every day, there was options. Where can I make my opt-out for organ donation? I will trust my next of kin to make that decision at that time. Well, I'll find that information out and give it to you when we're discussing it tomorrow, if that's okay. Because it didn't come live right at the very start of the day. I think it was 10 o'clock, but I'll check all that out for you. Wondering if Greg could contact the council. Traffic lights on the bridge on Castle Finn. The light is red for a long time, but the green is only on for about 10 seconds. It's been reported to the council several times. The traffic is especially bad on Sunday mornings after Mass. Caroline, can we will we raise that with the council? The Castle Finn, we are doing so. Okay, I'll do that for you. I love the way you think it's me that does it. I do some stuff, but it's all Caroline. Just to flag that Greg was wondering if the new EU law criminalised the production of all child sexual abuse material. I can confirm they do, as the development, possession and distribution of artificial intelligence systems used to produce child sexual abuse content is now criminalised. That's an update on that, so that's good. That's good. It does extend to that. Greg, I just heard you mention the sharing of information. I was looking for information from Donegal Coco and find I have to go to the council office to view it. Thing is, I can't find the location address of the council building anywhere on the website. Is it a secret? Right, I don't know exactly what that's related to. Would the public services buildings do? Would it have to be Lifford? You can't miss it, though, if you go into Lifford. Read the game. There might be not a big crowd on Sunday because it will take an hour to get to Bala Buffet. Everyone has to drive through Letterkenny. But if you, like, a couple of thousand people would have travelled to Cork if we were drawn that way, and lots of people spent 4.5 hours going to Roscommon. So being discommoded for an hour in our own county, I don't think it's going to discourage lots of people. We'll see. Okie doke, thanks so much for being with us for the last 3 hours. Can't wait to do it again already tomorrow morning from 9. Have a great day. Stay safe and stay tuned. John Breslin is around the Northwest after the news headlines at 12. I want to thank, actually, by the way, before I go, Caroline, working on the show, of course, researching and producing. We've got Katie helping us this week as well. Couldn't do it without them.